As we review our private equity data for the first half of this year, what's behind the recent uptick in exits? How has the fundraising environment changed since this time last year? And what were the most notable deals and industry events in the first 6 months of 2024? We'll be discussing all this and more in today's episode of the Merger Market Private Equity Podcast. Hello, listener, and welcome to this new episode of the Merger Market Private Equity Podcast. My name's Harriet Matthews. I'm funds editor at Merger Market, and I'll be your host for today's episode. As we move into the second half of 2024, we've been reviewing our data for the first half of the year, working out what this tells us about what's been changing in the market and what we can predict for the coming 6 months. I'm going to run you through some of this data briefly, and then I'm going to bring in a couple of my colleagues to discuss a bit more about what's really been going on in the market and what's behind some of these numbers. So according to Merger Market data, private equity deal activity in the first half of 2024 was roughly on par with the latter half of 2023. We saw disclosed deal volume of 93.1 billion euros recorded across 579 deals in the first 6 months of this year. Now, when we compare that with where we were this time last year, we can see just how much has changed. Disclosed deal volume is up by more than 160% versus the first half of 2023. On the exit side now, we saw disclosed deal volume in the second quarter of 2024 reach 47.7 billion euros. That's the strongest it's been in any quarter since the heady heights of the fourth quarter of 2021. A very different market, I'm sure you'll all agree. Disclosed deal volume and deal count for secondary buyouts in particular was the highest in Q2 that it has been since Q1 2022. This is cause for optimism, given that secondary buyouts is a strong indicator of the confidence of private equity buyers and sellers in valuations and debt markets. A few notable recent secondary buyouts include Nordic Capital's sale of assistive mobility solutions business Sunrise Medical to Platinum Equity, PAI's sale of infrastructure services business M Group to CVC, EQT's exit of real estate platform Idealista to Cinven, and we also saw the much anticipated sale of wealth management software platform Harvest, owned by Five Arrows, to TA Associates and Montague. With all of that said, it has been a more muted half year for fundraising, with buyout funds raising 84.9 billion euros across 46 vehicles, according to Merger Market data. But as I wrote earlier this year in an analysis piece, there are signs that conditions could be easing towards the end of this year and in 2025, but much of that will depend on when the distributions from this uptick in exits that we're seeing actually reach LPs. Joining me to discuss where things stand as we enter the second half of the year are my colleagues Min Ho and Rachel Lewis. Min and Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Hi, Harriet. Hi, Min.
Thank you for joining me, both of you. Now, obviously, I've reviewed the data here in that introduction, and I think it's fair to say there's been a general sense that some of the factors that were inhibiting deal flow, last year and even in the early part of this year, have been easing in the past few months and are set to continue easing. We are already seeing this reflected in our data, as I've said, and in secondary buyouts in particular. Rachel, I know this is something you've been looking into and have written about before. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so I really want to narrow in on our secondary buyout data, as it's a really great indicator of both where exits and buyouts are at. The numbers are actually really, really encouraging, as the second quarter this year saw a return to pre-downturn levels of activity, with around 19.6 billion euros worth of disclosed deal value across 54 deals. And just to put that in a kind of headline figure, that are both across both metrics is the highest that we've seen since the first quarter of 2022. And as we all know, the third quarter is kind of where things started to turn bad of 2022.
Absolutely. So yeah, sort of deal count and volume are up, which is really positive. And it's a clear sign that we're seeing sponsors both deploying and exiting, which is that part of the private equity cycle that people have been talking about as being kind of a bit
broken previously. So, Rachel, what have been the changes, would you say, that have finally allowed that part of the market and the cycle to kind of unlock?
It's a good question, because with the first quarter actually started off incredibly slow. I wrote an article back in March that this year's sponsor exits had started off worse than last, but it does now seem that most have started to shrug off concerns. And I think there's a few factors behind this. Sponsors have gotten used to the new interest rate environment, which in and of itself is becoming more stabilized, and buyers and sellers roughly know what macro environment they're working with, and underlying numbers within portfolios or target companies have kind of become a lot more normalized, and thus people can kind of work with a better structuring of numbers and how to structure deals around that. So yes, debt is still expensive. But I think the kind of the dynamic around this and what's changed is that we've seen buyers take advantage of tools to essentially bridge the financing with more equity, but they're not putting in that equity themselves. We've seen kind of a greater use of co-investment and vendor equity rollover in order to bridge that gap. So the seller rolls some equity into the new vehicle, or yes, co-investment tickets with LPs or kind of co-investment specific funds. And there are absolutely loads of examples, but just to give you a recent one, Cinven rolled a minority stake into partner in pet food recently, which was acquired by CVC, which was a deal that we were covering on Merger Market. And just to kind of add a bit more colour to this, I was speaking to Ardian quite recently after it just closed a $3.2 billion co-investment fund. And Alexandre Motte, who heads the strategy for the sponsor, said that in the past 2 years, the deal flow has shifted so that it is now doing two-thirds underwriting of co-investment, which means before the deal is closed, rather than syndicated, which is after it closes. And the fund is in its sixth vintage, and those numbers were inverted when he started 17 years ago. So I think this shows that it's really about completion risk and bringing in a co-investor or sorting out that extra equity ticket as an, you know, before the deal is signed, as the auction is in the second round, to kind of really prove that conviction in being a buyer.
That's fascinating, because we've been thinking a lot about how deals are structured in the current environment. And we've seen this shift from sponsors raising funds potentially every couple of years, deploying equity quickly, to, you know, being a bit more disciplined and wanting to kind of stretch the equity they have in those funds. So I suppose that kind of corresponds to all of that.
Yeah, absolutely, as well, because there's a really interesting piece, as you rightly mentioned, which is it's taking longer to fundraise. People are being more cautious in how they deploy, but the funds that they do have available, they want to deploy those as efficiently as possible, which means that they can't just go and put in bigger equity tickets themselves across every deal. And obviously that eventually has an impact on returns as well. So it's like, okay, how do you bring in that extra missing piece in the equity puzzle? And I do think that has largely been very important in unlocking this secondary buyout environment that we're in.
And that brings us actually to the question of the fundraising environment. Obviously, I mentioned in the introduction to this episode that according to preliminary data from Unquote Data, we've seen around 84.9 billion euros raised across 46 buyout funds in Europe. Since the start of this year, three of those were mega cap fundraisers of over 10 billion from CVC, Partners Group, and Cinven. But I want to dive into sort of what's going on a bit beyond those headline figures. So Min, it would be great to hear from you on that. What's happening in the fundraising market, and what's changed, you know, versus this time last year, say?
So I think you'll be similar to what Rachel has just said at especially beginning of the year. I think a lot of people's perspective was that it was going to be a very, very difficult fundraising environment, particularly since we've gone through 2023. Of course, if we're going to compare it to 2020, 2021, it's definitely a very difficult environment. But what I am getting from speaking to GPs and LPs is that the environment is getting better. There are less managers currently in the market right now than, say, 12 months ago. A lot of the large cap funds have closed or closer to closing their funds. CVC last year closed at $26 billion on their ninth fund, and same with Permira 8, which is a $16 billion plus euro fund. So yes, large cap GPs are slowly but surely having final close, and that means that a lot of the kind of competitors, the smaller GPs, are now getting a bit more visibility in the kind of current marketplace right now. So versus previous, perhaps LPs would be thinking about which funds to re-up with, but now there's obviously perhaps less choices, but have more capacity to look at other new GPs.
Interesting. And where are LPs actually looking now? Or, you know, where are the ones who have room for new relationships and adding new strategies looking?
That's an interesting question. I think I'm speaking to more LPs who are saying that they're looking more into value. I guess it's the kind of debate of value versus growth. It's been pretty obvious that growth has been generally a lot harder to come by, and more interest into value strategies could make sense now. So, you know, investing GPs with capabilities to invest in companies where they have the ability to work more operationally, say in areas such as industrial or logistics, helping them, say, with tech enablement and other levers, and perhaps helping them achieve more recurring revenue. And, you know, it's been pretty clear that for industrial companies, the multiples are nowhere close to the tech companies. So basically, working on these kind of operational leverage can obviously, for industrial companies, can really enhance the multiples, even in an environment where perhaps broadly speaking, the multiples are retracting.
Interesting. And you mentioned tech in there. I'm curious to hear what you're hearing from the market about those kinds of strategies as well, because, you know, I've said this before on the podcast, I think, but a lot of people, you know, with tech in their investment focus bought quite high in 2021. There's a general sense that, you know, buyer seller valuations are adjusting a bit from then. But yeah, what are you hearing about kind of the LP view on tech strategies?
Yeah, so quite interesting, because obviously, you know, we've been speaking to a lot of GPs and they've been investing into tech, a lot of tech deals. But now some LPs that I've been speaking to are slightly more cautious. They're seeing that these GPs with tech in the portfolio, there's been a slight slowdown in the kind of growth rates. Obviously, when GPs were underwriting these deals back, say, 2-3 years ago, they expected 20% growth. But the reality now is that they are, you know, current 10% growth on top line. And, you know, while that would have been fine in other sectors, say in consumer or industrials, but you obviously have to think about the leverage that's been involved. Under the high interest rate environment. And what if, say, 2-3 years ago, they paid a high premium for these for the deal itself? So that's obviously a big question mark that's gathering from LPs.
I mean, we have seen some really significant tech exits or secondary buyouts finally coming through in the first half of this year, including Bain's sale of Zealous, for example. But yeah, it will be very interesting to see how LPs kind of consider tech in their portfolio as those expectations continue to adjust and GPs continue to need to exit those deals. I think something else I wanted to mention, sort of linking together the kind of fundraising and deal-making situation and considering what's happened in the first half of the year, is our reporting on Equistone. Because I think sort of the situation there with what we're hearing about sort of their fundraise and how that's going is quite symptomatic of the current market. And, you know, I think we've been quite positive throughout this episode, as we should be given where the data is. But at the same time, we've been hearing for a long time about sort of market consolidation, LPs narrowing down relationships. And Rachel, I know, you know, I think it was at IPEM earlier this year, there was this discussion around funds and the fact that GPs really need to be making exits from the fund that was kind of too vintages prior to the one they're currently raising. And clearly, from our reporting, that's been something that Equistone were kind of hit by. So it will be interesting, I think, to see this year, you know, hopefully we're seeing more fundraising success come through. But at the same time, we might be seeing some of those situations where GPs perhaps have been struggling more sort of coming through as well, or coming to fruition, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone kind of needs to keep an eye on their N-2 vintage, which unfortunately for Equistone was Fund 5. And it's 2015 vintage, and its most recent IRR was around 8%, which puts it in the third quartile. What I will say is I was putting together some data on this yesterday. Equistone actually has done one of the highest numbers of exits among European GPs to date so far this year when I was pulling the numbers together. So I think this repositioning and the exits will probably resound with LPs going forward. And I think kind of once LPs start to look at the returns for the current vintage, which is actually very good. People say that the kind of the most recent iteration, Fund 6 is performing very well. So I think it's just kind of a bit of a sit and wait situation, but just shows, you know, to circle back to the kind of the beginning of this conversation otherwise, is how important it is to have vintage diversification within your portfolio, within the fund, and kind of making sure that you're kind of deploying effectively across different years, across different sectors, making sure that you're doing the value creation and kind of making sure you structure your deals in a good way, because yeah. So it's crazy how much performance can differ vintage to vintage. And LPs are kind of looking for a little bit more consistency.
Yeah, definitely. Those kind of fundraising and deal making mechanics can sort of work against GPs, unfortunately. But I think overall we have seen a kind of uptick in sentiment and positivity, which is, you know, good to see. And we'll be sure to keep you informed, listener, via our reporting on Merger Market and via our podcasts, of course, of how things are shaping up as we move into the third quarter of this year. I think we'll wrap this episode up there, but thank you, Rachel and Min, for joining me. It's been great to have you both on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, listener, for tuning in. If you like the podcast, then please don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also check out the Ion Analytics Podcasts channel on Apple Podcasts for more podcasts produced by the team at Ion Analytics. We'll see you again in the next episode.